One of the things that's really exciting about having the opportunity to be one of the co-secretaries of this meeting is the privilege of listening to a lot of speakers and calling people up and asking them if they'll come out and share their message of recovery with us. And one of the people that I've listened to for a few years on tape and never had the opportunity to meet personally until yesterday when I picked her up at Oakland Airport, and it took us 4 hours to get to Pleasanton by way of Half Moon Bay, is this evening's speaker. I hope you enjoy her as much as I've enjoyed spending the last 2 days with her. I'd like to introduce my friend Beth G. from Brecksville, Ohio.
That's it. I would like to, first of all, thank Penny for asking me, and thank you very much for showing me part of this beautiful state. I thoroughly enjoyed myself since I got in here. I would like to say God bless you to Candy. We go a long way back. And it is a privilege to be here. It's always a privilege for me to be at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, anywhere. I watched you get your chips tonight, and I get all weepy-eyed because I still cannot believe that I was given a gift for sobriety. It's one of those things, and I don't... It's a blessing is what it is. And I don't want to get all weepy-eyed. Number one, these aren't my eyelashes. You lose a lot of body here when you drink. My eyelashes didn't grow back. My hair did. And what else grew back and what else didn't is really none of your business. So anyway, I try to keep that down because one time... I got all weepy-eyed, and they fluttered down my cheek and kind of settled under my nose, and I finished the thing looking like Hitler. My name is Beth Gordon. I'm an alcoholic. And it is by the grace of God, the power of this program, 12 beautiful steps, a wonderful fellowship, a sponsor that still remains on my back one day at a time, and the best home group in the world that I haven't had a drink, nor have I had to use anything else to make me more squirrely than I already am since March the 5th of 1972. Thank you. Speaking of that, you know, I got thinking when you said the Serenity Prayer in the beginning. We always say that at home, and I'm sure you all know where Brecksville, Ohio is. Actually, it's 20 miles south of Cleveland and 9 miles north of Akron, now you know. But we always say that, and I remember the Serenity Prayer with a lot of warmth, and every time I say it, I get a feeling of being real warm on the inside, because I remember in the beginning of my sobriety when I was hauled to meetings by my sponsors, that was one of the first things I ever remember hearing. And I had heard it once, I guess, when I was a little girl, a couple times. That's neither here nor there. But I do remember that I wanted you to like me. God, I wanted you to like me. It had been so long since anybody had wanted me around, and I didn't know what I was going to do. If you didn't like me. And, you know, I lived in that god-awful silence in my house. Nobody was speaking to me anymore. You know, you go outside for a little fresh air every so once in a while, and you wave if a car goes by, and nobody waves back. It's a terribly lonely existence. And I didn't know what I was going to do if that happened to me here. So I remember I made my mouth move and sounds come out so that you'd think that I knew the Serenity Prayer and that I could stay. And my sponsor gave it to me in the rib cage for the first of many, many times. And she said to me, hey, you don't have to pretend anymore. You can take the mask off in these rooms. And she said, I want to tell you something, Beth. You're going to find out who you are, and you're going to find out where you're going, and you're going to find out what life is all about. And all you have to do is stay here. You know, nobody's ever asked me to keep coming back. Didn't want to give me the edge, I guess. It's always stay here. And take the cotton out of your ears and shove it in your mouth and listen and learn how to hear. The day will come when you can say that Serenity Prayer. And I stayed in these meeting rooms, and I took the cotton out of my ears, and I put it in my mouth. And I remember the meeting, and I remember who was sitting on my right, and I remember who was sitting on my left. When I could say that Serenity Prayer, and I knew something. I knew you didn't lie to me. And I knew that if I stayed here, and I listened, and I learned how to hear, that my life would get better. And first when you kept saying to me, you know, your life will get better, I thought you meant that everybody was going to do everything that I wanted them to do. See? Everybody else was going to be like I wanted them to be, and life would be just dandy. And I said, boy, I can't wait until I get there. And my sponsor said, where's there? And I said, you know, there, when you have it made and you know everything, she said, I'm going to tell you two things. Number one is, if you're so interested in getting there, she said, it's like you're sitting on a train, and you're so intent in getting into the station that you're missing all the scenery because you're not looking out the window. And the scenery is life. And this is what this is all about. It's a way of life. So start looking out because you're never going to get there. You never have it made. And I said, oh, the day I die, I'll have it made. And she said to me, I'm going to tell you something that happens to you on the day you die. The day you die, honey, you go to the big meeting in the sky, and when you walk through those gates, you go in as the new guy, and you start all over again. Never get there. I don't know. Anyway, there's a lot. She also told me that the Serenity Prayer means I got to concentrate on me, that I'm the only thing I can change, and not to dilly around with trying to change people and places and things, because I was just going to be feeling a lot of real discomfort, and I don't like to feel uncomfortable. I don't know about you, but I felt uncomfortable for too darn many years, and I don't want to feel uncomfortable anymore. And I don't, sometimes I do get messing around and want to change other people. I'm not perfect. I don't stand, You know, we strive for perfection. I'm not perfect. But if I start messing around and trying to change somebody else, I get uncomfortable, and I don't want to be that way anymore. I hate feeling uncomfortable. I felt uncomfortable for too many years. There's a prayer that I say every morning that kind of goes along with this. And I heard it a while ago, and it goes something like this. When I was born, I cried, and the world rejoiced. And I pray to God that I may live each moment so that when I die, I will rejoice and the world will cry. In other words, try to do the best darn job you can every day. I like to remember March the 4th of 1972. I told you that you say birthdays, we call them anniversaries back home. But that was March the 5th of 72. But on March the 4th of 72, I was sitting at a kitchen table, mine. Finished everything there was that I had in the house to drink by 8:30 in the morning. And it was one of those god-awful times where you can't get drunk and you can't get sober. It was the first time I didn't have that feeling, that awful feeling down there that dear God, I had to have something else before I could get out to get something. First time I didn't go for the rubbing alcohol or the extracts or the cologne to keep me going. I hate the smell of Chanel No. 5. Gave me good breath. Nobody I sponsor wears Chanel No. 5, I'll tell you that. I make them go wash. But it did the job. I didn't have that terrible feeling. I just kind of sat there. I watched my family go to church. Nobody said goodbye. They quit that. Nobody waved, nobody did anything, they just left. And on those faces I saw everything ugly that had happened in my life. Everything ugly that had been created by alcohol. And I knew something when that door shut. And I knew it all the way down deep into that little part of you. It still belonged to God that I call my soul. I knew I'm an alcoholic. And everything ugly that had been created was because I am an alcoholic. And God, I wanted to live. I felt like I was dying. I don't think that I weighed 64 pounds and my hair was all coming out in shreds and I just could hardly function anymore. It was getting too tough to walk. I just knew I was dying. God, I wanted to live. And in that split second, I have to believe today that part of me that still belonged to God, yes, that I called my soul, opened up and God zoomed in. That's the only explanation I have for it. And I'd slammed a door on God a long time ago. I didn't cry out, God help me or anything else like that. I just wanted to live. And I went to the phone and I called my Aunt Jean in Chicago. That's where I was born and raised. You'll be able to tell that. who at that time had 9 years of uninterrupted sobriety, and I told her I was dying and I wanted to live. And she asked me the name of an old-timer that had never given up hope on me, and his name is Jerry Jackson, and Jerry died with umpty-umpt years of sobriety in 1978. I had met Jerry when I fooled around Alcoholics Anonymous starting in 1962. And for those of you who are new, for God's sake, listen. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I was everybody else's problem. I didn't drink till I was 26 years old. I hated the stuff. I hated it because everybody I'd grown up with in the whole family were alcoholics, and I didn't like it. We had wonderful Christmases and Thanksgivings and stuff till somebody cracked out the booze, and I should have learned something. I should have learned to stay away from it. And I got married to a wonderful guy, one of those kinds that isn't an alcoholic and works the 12 steps. You know, one of those. And I wasn't happy. I didn't like being married at all. I liked to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. You can't do that when you're married. You just can't. It doesn't work right. And my first daughter was born, Annie, and I hated being a mother. There again, you have to do what you got to do, and I hated responsibility. And I wanted to live my life, and I wasn't telling anybody anything about myself. I came to AA like a garbage compactor. Everything was stuck way down there. Because I didn't tell you anything. I didn't want you to know a darn thing. And I was miserable. I never smiled. I never smiled till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sponsor said, "While you're running around all these meetings and you're reading the big book, why don't you smile and give your face something to do so it doesn't feel left out?" I've been smiling ever since. Anyway, so we were at this party, and somebody came up to me and said, "Why don't you smile? Why don't you ever learn how to relax? Why don't you have a drink?" It was a Manhattan on the rocks with a bunch of garbage coming out of it. And my arm shot out from my shoulder before I knew what was happening, and I picked that thing up, and I drank it. And it was the worst god-awful thing I'd ever had in my life. It made my eyes water. It made me want to throw up. It was horrible. It didn't even taste good. And then it hit. And something happened. I felt it going all through. It was something else just happened too. My pantyhose just broke. Like I have knickers and then knee socks, you'll know what's going on. Maybe they'll stay up. God does do for you what you can't do for yourself. Yeah. So pardon me back there if I'm... Anyway... Isn't it wonderful we don't have to drink today when we're in a dilemma? Anyway, I hated it. Well, then it hit, okay? And I felt, and all this warm went through me. And all of a sudden, I could open my mouth and I could talk. And I wasn't embarrassed anymore. And the words just flowed. And I felt like a part of. And then I went to the bathroom, and when I was washing my hands and I looked in the mirror, that did it. I saw Elizabeth Taylor looking back at me, and I thought, right on, baby, this is it. And from then on, I drank, I got drunk, and I got into trouble. It's just that simple. and I didn't think I was getting into any trouble. I wasn't doing anything wrong. I thought everybody kind of fell asleep after, you know, a while, and I had a pawnbroker in Cleveland, and I was lifting stuff out of the house, and you know, I thought, well, we don't need it, and I had to keep up with my habit, then he started to keep a list of what was, you know, going on in the house, and he'd ask me where was the silver pot from Great Aunt Hoosis, and I'd say, I don't know, and it was in the window down on Prospect Avenue in Cleveland. But I didn't say, so I didn't think that was wrong, and yeah, I was sneaking it in, because who didn't? You know, he wasn't letting me drink that much, and I discovered wine. I loved it, rocket juice. It takes you where you want to go quick, and it was cheap and accessible, and it came in all different sizes, you know, the little pints you could poke in your front, and you could walk into the house without having a lump, and it was, you know, the large economy thing. It was wonderful, wonderful. And yeah, I used to hide them, you know, favorite place was the douchebag, and you missed out, didn't you, Glenn? Well, you could pour it in there and hang it up in the bathroom and put foil over the top so the fumes didn't come out, and you know, who the Sam Hill looks in one of those? And then you could go in the bathroom, you know, and then you could take the hose and unclick it. It's just wonderful. Did it with the enema bag, too. Sometimes I would be hoovering upstairs, you know, and I could never read my maps I made myself where I hid stuff. It didn't work. I never could read my own writing, my instructions. So I got to painting some white, and I'd hang them out the second story window on a white rope. And you couldn't see them because we live in a white house. I know because I went out and looked, and I didn't see it. And then you could hoover a little and then haul the thing up and glurk and let it back down. And that worked swell until he saw it. And he said, Beth, get out here. What is this? And he pointed. And I said, I don't see what you're looking at. And he said, you really are, this is terrible. Now you stay right there. I'm going down the street to get my best friend. So I said, all right, I promised, you know. And he said, don't move. And I said, I won't. And he left, and he got around the first bush, and I beat the Olympic record going up those stairs, grabbed it in, hauled it underneath the bed, ran back downstairs, and was standing in the front yard, and I wasn't even breathing hard when he came back with his friend. And he said, do you see what's happening to her? She is an alcoholic. Look what she's pulling. And I'll never forget it. His friend looked at him, and he said, Bruce, you ought to go for psychiatric care. There is nothing the man. And so, well, things like that were going on, you know, dumb things. So I went around. He said, you gotta go to Alcoholics Anonymous or I'm gonna cut off your allowance. And he'd taken me off the checkbook and he cut me out of the savings account and all that stuff. So to have money coming in, I said, all right. And so I went around AA the first of three times, and I told you, if you're new, for God's sake, listen. I walked through those doors, and I wasn't honest with me or with you. I kept an open mind. I heard your stories. I heard about your jails, your divorces, your loss of your children. And everything else, and that hadn't happened to me yet. And I think yet is one of the most important words that there is. Because if it hasn't happened, and you so choose to go out there and to continue to do what you're doing, it will. And it does. And I wasn't willing to do anything he asked me to do. 2 years later, the neighbors called the social service workers. The violence had set in. The children were going to school not dressed properly. And my husband was a sales engineer, and he traveled almost the whole entire state of Ohio, and he was gone 5 days and four nights a week. And neighbors can't bird dog when doors are locked and shades are pulled and you've terrified your kids. And the social service workers said, you're going to lose these children, even if you are married. So you go to AA and you shape up. My God, always I had just wanted to be a good wife and a good mother since I was a real little person. And I didn't understand what was happening. So I went around AA and I played the same game. And I'd get up and I'd walk out during the meeting. And I'd go to one meeting a week. I never heard of anybody who keeps a job that goes once a week to school. I have never, or to their job. I have never heard of a kid who passes from one grade to the next that goes once a week to school. I don't think it can be done. And I'm not talking for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just telling you how I feel and what happened to me. And I wasn't willing to do anything. 4 years later, a judge looked at me over a thing like this, and he said, 90 days in the workhouse or Alcoholics Anonymous. I was on my ninth DUI, and I was up on a very bad assault and battery charge. Very bad. I had been driving along in my inimitable fashion. I have 20/20 vision in this eye. This one's shot. And the reason is, you who can't see, the reason is because I was watching television with this eye shut. I was driving along with this eye shut. The yellow lines kept together. I was doing everything. Everybody, I almost got into a lot of trouble. People used to think I was continually winking at them. And it was just so that everything kind of wouldn't haze out. And I had been driving along, and the soft berm popped up and came into the middle of the road, and I went in it naturally, and I was trying to get out of it, and the Summit County Sheriff happened by, and he knocked on the window, and the first mistake I made was rolling down the window, and the fumes came out, and he said to me, have you been drinking? And I said, I just had one, and he looked at the gallon in the car, and he saw the empty fifth on the floor and the half-gone fifth on the seat, and he said, I think I should take you home. And I didn't want him to take me home. And I told him so. What would the neighbors think? You know, after all, the neighbors probably would have had this huge party. And he said yes, and I said no, and he said yes, and I said no, and he said yes, and I got mad, and I hit him over the head with my wine bottle. And he got 24 stitches, and I got my picture taken with some numbers under my chin. So the judge was mad. So I didn't want to go to the workhouse. I didn't like the way the stripes went or in the suits, and I was too well educated anyway. So I went around AA, and I played the same game, and the next 4 years were hell. And that's why I remember March the 4th of 1972. Jerry came over to the house, and he said to me, you know, Beth, it's not going to be easy. Nothing in life that's worthwhile is easy, but I'll promise you something. If you take our hands and you trudge this road of sobriety with us, things will get better. And Jerry gave me hope that day. The same kind of hope that he'd given to my family all those years when he'd met them in 1962. For 10 solid years, that man kept coming over to the house and giving them that hope. The same kind of hope we give each other in these rooms. The same kind of hope we give each other when we're listening on a telephone to what somebody is saying and what they are not saying. That hope that we give each other over a cup of coffee after a meeting or going to and from a meeting. And you know, I saw that kind of hope one day. I was cleaning my house when I was sober, and a cobweb that was in the corner, and a little spider came down, hoo-hoo, on this little invisible something. And he was hanging on, and I put my mop back, and I was going to kill him. I can't stand those things. I have tried, but I can't stand them. And so, you know, I was looking at him, and I thought, you know, he's hanging on like we hang on by our fingernails sometimes. That same kind of hope when, you know, when the little gray cloud comes whooping across the sun, we hang on. And I thought, that's what he's doing. And I couldn't kill him. I watched him. I didn't stand there like some kind of an idiot and watch him. It takes him a couple days. But every time I'd go through, I'd watch him. And he put one fuzzy foot over the other. And he rebuilt what had been destroyed, his home. It was the most beautiful spider web I have ever seen in my life. It was stronger, it was mightier than the one I had knocked down. And when the sunlight came through the windows and would hit it, it would make beautiful, beautiful colors on the wall. And I got to remember something like that on those days when, you know, the little gray cloud comes across the sun. And if I can remember that and remember to hang on, just like that spider did, it just seems that everything clears up so much easier. That's hope. That's that wonderful hope. And then they came, the sponsors. God, pick your own. Oh. They roar in the kitchen. And they told me everything I never wanted anybody to hear in my life. You know, that's in to just kind of go down a dirt road here for a minute. There's nothing in the world I don't think like a 12-step call. I just love it. I was on one last week. There's just nothing like going into a home and extending that hope to another human being to say, hey, it's going to be okay. And to share a little bit of yourself with them. And 12-step calls are wonderful. I remember one I had when I was sober. It was 9 months my sponsor took me on one. She called up and she said, what are you doing? And we'd already been to 2 meetings that day. What are you doing? And I said, nothing. And she said, the call has come in. And I said, the what? She said, and when the hand goes out, we are responsible. I'll pick you up. So we went over to this house and knocked on the door, and nobody answered. So I went back to the car, and she said, where are you going? And I said, hey, she's not home. And she said, when the hand goes, oh, God. She said, look, you go into the garage and see if there's an extension ladder because the windows open a little bit up there. I said, that's breaking and entering. She said, we didn't call her, she called us. And when, oh, God, shut up. So I went in and got the extension ladder, and I put it up, and I held it. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm holding the ladder. She said, you're going up the ladder. Here's the big book. Go up the ladder. And I said, I'm afraid of heights. And she said, faith and fear don't dwell in the same house. Get up the ladder. And so I took the book, and she's been shaking. She's got 48 years of uninterrupted sobriety now. And she has shook since she came into AA hundreds of years ago. So she's standing there like this, and I'm going up because the hand is out. And when I went through the window, it was open. When I went through the window, I caught my foot and I fell face down on the poor, suffering alcoholic who was laying prone on the floor clutching onto her vodka bottle. I ended that far from her face, and I thought to myself, my God, what do I say? I've never been on one. So I just looked at her and I said, did you call Alcoholics Anonymous? Stayed sober out of fear ever since, she said. Anyway, but I love 12-step calls. So in the house they roar, and they're telling me all this stuff I don't want them to know. And then they get in the corner. And you know how it is when you're new, and people who've been in AA a while, they talk. And it's just loud enough so you can catch little words. And I heard, oh, God, she's sick. She isn't she going to die? And some guy, when I was speaking at a meeting, stood up after the meeting was over, and he said, sick, you look like olive oil after a shipwreck. And pantyhose or none. So anyway, and so they started calling the treatment centers. And there was one called Rosary Hall in Cleveland. And Rosary Hall had 2 detox beds for women. And they said, sorry, we've closed them down. We're opening up to 5 detox beds next week. So we closed them down because we're painting the walls pink and hanging up polka dotty curtains. So we don't have nobody. Yeah, poo. And they called Serenity Hall in Cleveland. And they didn't take women at all. And they called St. Thomas Hospital in Akron, and they had 3 detox beds for women, and they had a 4.5-week waiting list. So my sponsors decided nobody had ever died on them, and by God, nobody was going to start. So we went to 2 and 3 meetings a day, 7 days a week for the first year I was sober. And one time, I picked up a telephone and called my sponsor and said, I am too tired to go. I don't want to ever hear silence like that again. Death isn't that quiet. And then she sucked in air. And when she does, it's like being in the eye of a tornado. If you think you're tired, what do you think we are? We'll be there in 10 minutes. Wham! Down went the thing. I was out ready. Here I am. I never did that again. And it was in these meeting rooms that I am learning. I am learning how to live. These meeting rooms. I felt that warm handshake. God, I love that. Do you know what that means? Can you think back when you were new? It's just like somebody takes your cold hand in their warm one, and there's so much strength that goes through there. And they say, welcome. Welcome. I went back to a meeting where I'd leave the meeting and I'd go out and drink when I was fiddling about with the hand. And nobody said, was it fun out there? Nobody said, what took you so long? I don't know what I'd done if they didn't. It was just welcome with that handshake. I heard the serenity prayer, I told you that. And then somebody said to me, if you ever get the idea of being a social drinker again, I want to tell you a story. And I'd never been a social drinker. I don't know what a social drinker is. The closest I ever came to being a social drinker was when somebody said, I think I'll have another drink. And I said, so shall I. Ho-ho. And we got on with it. But they said, you know, Beth, it's like you're a cucumber growing in a garden. And it's all right there. Rain's on you, all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, one day somebody picks you, and they put you in this big, deep barrel of guck. And they put on a lid. And it's dark in there. And there is no time. There is no day. There is no night. And how long are you in there? Who knows? Days, months, weeks, years. And then somebody lifts the lid off and they reach in and they bring you out. And when they do, my dear, you are no longer a cucumber. You have turned into a pickle. And there is no way that a pickle can ever become a cucumber again. Now go buy yourself a jar of pickles, I was told. Put them on the shelf right by in the front of the refrigerator for a reminder that you were a cucumber, you're a pickle, and by God, you can't ever become a cucumber again. I still have a jar of pickles in my refrigerator. Not the same ones. Times are tough, but they're not that tough. And you know what? I catch myself opening that refrigerator door sometimes, and I'll say, what step are you guys on, you know? If it works, use it. And they also told me to stay away from the first drink a day at a time, and I've never had one drink in my life. And so they asked me to walk out of the meeting and go down some stairs and cross the field and sit down on some railroad tracks. And they said it will teach you patience and tolerance to sit there while the choo-choo is coming along. And then when the choo-choo hits you, you come up and get up off the railroad track and come on back up in the meeting and tell us how you feel. Now, I was fuzzy through the head, but I wasn't that fuzzy. I said, I'll never be back. I'll be dead. I'll be dead when the engine hits me and the whole room exploded right on. It's the engine that kills you, not the caboose. It's the first drink that pulls something up here over which you have no physical control. And that made me see about that first drink. When this meeting is over, if anybody dare asks me what happens if the train is going in reverse, I will clock you one. Since I was born when Lincoln was president of the United States, the engine has always been pulling the train.
Please turn your tape over for the rest of the message. Thank you.
It's the engine that kills you, not the caboose. I could see it. That first drink. But I couldn't stay away from the first drink for 24 hours. I have never been able to work this program on a 24-hour basis. It's got to be right now. Right now, I can handle the way I feel. Right now, I can do something about when I feel resentment or self-pity or any of that stuff. And yes, and I get angry. I'm not a saint. I told you that. And I get all those feelings because I'm human. But by God, I can handle it today because of you. And I can do it right now. It's just like I had to stay away from the first drink right now because right now I knew what to do and you told me. And I'm using the same stuff today as I used back then. You told me to get 25 phone numbers and put them up next to my telephone on the wall. And I said, 25 phone numbers? I said, well, I have this little phone book. And they said, what's going to happen when you want a drink and your stomach's going, and your head's going around like a windmill? How are you going to remember where you put that little book? If they're up there on the wall, you can pick up that phone and you can dial. And my sponsor taught me how to use a phone. I had to call her at the same time every single day. And I want to tell you something I didn't dare miss. And all that stuff. But I have to call that battle axe that every single day at the same time. And all she says to me, don't drink, go to meetings, trust God, clean house, and help others. Wham. And that's that. Anyway, and it works. And the reason for 25 is if you call the first person, okay, and the line's busy, then you won't get all mad and full self-pity and all that kind of stuff and say, the hell with it. You will go on to the second one. And if that person is out living, you won't get angry and mad and full of resentment and self-pity and telling it. Or whatever you're doing today. I don't care. Drugs are drugs. I don't care what clothing it wears. It all does the same thing. Anyway, so you can go on until somebody on that list is there and will listen to what you are saying and to what you are not saying. And this might save your life. It's important, and it's important for me. I still have the 25 numbers by my phone. They've changed over the years because some people have gone tooling off to the big meeting in the sky. Some have just gone tooling off. I don't know, but I still got 25. And I have them under my phone at work, and I have them under my phone upstairs. I don't want to be without those because when I get any of that negative stuff today, my God, I'll pick it up. Because they say in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to be on guard for the unguarded moment. And the unguarded moment can come when you're full of joy and happiness, and it can come when you're down in the basement. They took me to a duck pond, and they said, what do you see? And I said, ducks. And they said, what are they doing? And they were gliding along. There wasn't a ripple in the water. And they said, all right, now put your face underneath the water. And open your eyes and take a peek at what they're doing. And when you come back up, tell us what you saw. And I did it. I was willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. And with those two there, and I did. And when I came up, they said, we're going around like this. And they said, that's right. And you remember this. If your legs stop like the legs of a duck, you will sink and you will die. Your legs are going to go around in AA, Beth, because it's called action, and action is the name of the game. And without action, you will sink and you will die, and you remember it. And that's why we have coffee cups to pick up. That's why we have tables to set up. That's why we have kitchen duty. That's why we have door greeters. That's why we have chairmen. That's why we have secretaries. That's why we have people to do all that stuff. Action is the name of the game. And don't forget it. They told me to read the big book. 2 pages a day out loud. They said the way of life is in there. They're all in the steps. And they said the reason that you read 2 pages of the big book out loud per day is to get it in here, to here, and down into here. I still read 2 pages of the big book out loud every day. I am on my 7th big book. Because I underline and I write in the margins. It changes. It's magic. It keeps switching itself all about. And I love it. I believe it's the greatest love story I have ever read in my life. Take a look around this room. Nobody should be here. Nobody. We should be dead. We should be in insane asylums. We should be sitting down, begging for money for our next can of Sterno or whatever. And if you happen to be an Al-Anon sitting here, you should be crazy. And yet, I didn't say are, I said should be. It's damn dead serious stuff too, people. That book is a story of how 12 wonderful God-given steps a way of life can allow us to live and live like we have never lived before. It is the love story between a God as we understand Him and people who should be dead and insane. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And I love it. I love it. And if you get real ants in your pants about carrying it with you where you're going, because somebody might see those white letters on the front, it says Alcoholics Anonymous. It comes in a little pocket size, people. And Alcoholics Anonymous is the same color as the cover. It's blue. And you can read it on a bus or on a streetcar or wherever you are, and people will think you're probably reading a porno book, and they won't ask. So you can take it. They told me to read the 24-hour book. We read this in Ohio. They said, read the 24-hour book 4 times a day out loud to hear the thought for the day. And I still read this thing, the thought for the day, 4 times a day out loud to get it in here, to here, and down into here. That's all I was allowed to read for the first 3 years I was sober, except Winnie the Pooh. And they made me read Winnie the Pooh because there's a character in there called Eeyore, and he whines. And oh, God. And my sponsor said to me, we do not want whiners in Winnie the in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you read Winnie the Pooh. Because that dumb donkey, he whines because he thinks he's lost his tail. And the reason he thinks he's lost his tail is because he never lifts his head up off the ground to turn around and walk. Everybody I sponsor reads Winnie the Pooh before they read the big book. I'll clue you. I don't like whiners. And they let me read The Little Engine That Could also. I think I can. I think I can. I know I can. It's wonderful. On my third birthday in Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsors bought me a big box like this. And in it was every pamphlet that AA had at that time, plus the Sermon on the Mount and the 12 and 12. And they said, now you're ready. You know, we have what we call in our meetings comments. That after the speaker is through, why, somebody can stand up and say, thank you very much, Harriet, for what you said. Yeah, I could identify with that, Harriet. It really, blah, and then sit down. I went to stand up when I had 10 months sober for the first time, and I got pulled right back down in my seat. And they said, shut up and listen. We'll tell you when you're ready to get up. And I'll never forget it. I was sober a year, and the hat pin hit my fanny. And it was a long one, and she said it was her grandmother's. And she into my seat, and I was up, and on my feet. She said, now as long as you're up on your feet, why don't you say thank you? And I mean, this was the way, it had to be this way with me. It had to be. I still read the big book every day. Out loud, I 2 pages. I still read that 24-hour book. I still call her every day. And you said, get outside of yourself and go do something for somebody else. Send them a card. It can be a smile. Did you ever smile at somebody coming towards you that was walking on their face? They're not going to hit you with a 2x4. They won't. I have seen shoulders go back. I have heard people start to whistle. I have seen steps lighten. It might be the only thing anybody's given them in a long time. And selfishly, we can only keep what we try to give away. So those are some of the things. Some of the things. And I started, you know, working my way through the steps. And I got caught. I got caught on step 3. I just couldn't. And my sponsor said to me, take off your bedroom slippers at night, kneel down, and put them underneath your bed. And while you're down there doing that, you might say thank you. And I said, to who and for what? And they said, you'll find out who you're talking to. Don't push the river, honey. It runs just great by itself. Easy does it, but do it, you know. And then in the morning when you wake up and you lie there and you listen to the beginning of the new day, and I thought, what is this? I've heard, you know, take time to smell the flowers and bloom where you're planted, and now a bunch of horticulturists. And now I'm told to lie there and listen to the beginning of the new day. She said, have you ever heard it? And I said, no. She said, try it. You might be surprised. I heard rain for the first time, really heard it. I heard snow. I heard wind. I heard things that creaks and groans in the house. I heard the breathing of the people that I lived with. Maybe if I keep doing it, I'll hear the sun come up someday. But I realized when I was laying there with no guilt anymore, none of that stuff, that yeah, there was a beginning to a day, and I could hear those things. And it's become real important to me. I would like to say to you, if you live alone, however, and hear somebody breathing while you're doing this, dial 911 quick. Anyway, and then they said, get down your mirrors, and while you're grumbling for your bedroom slippers, remind yourself you're an alcoholic and the problem is you, and ask to make lemonade out of the lemons of life that bounce your way today, and get up and get on with this thing called living. And I did it, and I don't know when it was, but I found out who I was talking to, and I call him God. And I love my God as I understand it. He's a peach. He loves laughter. He loves life. He loves me. He doesn't make junky stuff. I've never said, why me? Number one, you never get an answer. Number two, why not me? Obviously, we're never given anything in a 24-hour period that with His grace, 12 beautiful steps, and the power, the strength that comes from each other, there's nothing we can't handle. You don't want my problems. I don't want yours. You can do it with His grace. I never put a question mark where God has put a period either. I have a God can. It says God can on it. It's an old Maxwell House coffee can. And if I, you know, something comes into my life I can't handle, I write it down. I stick it into my God can. And strangely enough, it's taken care of. It's taken care of. You know, the task in front of you is never as great as the power behind you. And that helped me start on a wonderful road that was allowing me to get ready to do that ultimately, that fourth step for the first time. I have done 7 fourth and fifth steps since I've been sober. You're never done with the steps. You just keep learning and more about them, and they're wonderful. But I was having trouble with letting go. I hear it at meetings. Let go, let God, let go. Oh, great. How? You know? And somebody said to me, my sponsor, did anybody ever do anything, fix anything for you? And I said, yes, my Scottish grandpa. And she said, tell me about it. And I said, well, I'll tell you. I had this Raggedy Ann doll and this dumb dog. When I was 6, got a hold of the thing, shook it, and the stuffings came out, and he bit off the arm, and her hair was, and it was, you know, her one eye was hanging out, and her other arm was half gone, and I was sad, because I love my Raggedy. I still have her today. I just loved her. I took her everywhere I went. I really loved her. And so I went to my grandpa and I climbed up on his lap with this doll and I said to him, Grandpa, can you fix it? And I remember those blue eyes looking at me and that wonderful Scottish brogue when he said to me, Bethy, I can't fix it until you let go. And I released it. I didn't give him instructions on how long and how and all of that. The blind faith of a child. I trusted him. And my sponsor said, you let go of things the same way, and that saved me. Because there were two things that were real difficult for me to let go of when I was working on that fourth step. And this enabled me to be able to do that. I had a little girl after Annie. And Kimmy was 18 months old, and she had the bad measles. And back then you had to watch children carefully. There were no shots. There was nothing like that. And Annie, I was pouring my wine into different containers in the kitchen, and I was pretty well gone in the morning. And Annie came out, and she said, Mama, Kimmy, Annie at this time was a little over 3, and she said, Kimmy, it looks fine. And I told Ann to go away, not to bother me. And she was back in just a second. And she said, Mama, Kimmy's lying on the floor, and she's the color of the sky. And I hit Ann. And I said, I told you to go away. The neurosurgeons at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital figured Kimberly was on her fourth convulsion when I got into the living room. And she had lost enough oxygen, so she retrogressed back to a 3-week-old baby and remained in that mental state until she died, by the grace of God, at the age of 9. I was able to let go of that. I was able to forgive myself for that. Because God has given me a gift of sobriety. And, you know, if God has forgiven me enough for that, who am I not to forgive myself? And I was able to let go of that. I had a little boy in 1970. He lived 8 days and he died. And he died an addict. He died because his mother drank for 9 months around the clock when she carried him. Always bargaining, always saying if. And he didn't make it. My husband came and got me within 24 hours after he was born because somebody at the hospital put a sign that said murderous on the door, and the nurses weren't real fond of taking care of anybody like that. I was able to let go of Jeffrey the same way that I had been able to let go and of Kimmy. And I had to reaffirm that we have been given a gift of sobriety. And if my God, as I understand him today, has given me this gift, then yes, he has forgiven me. And who am I not to forgive myself? The strength and the power that you get from the, you know, from the power that's behind you, you can work your way slowly but surely for the first time through those steps. And no, I did not practice the principles in all my affairs. I was a great wife, and I was a great mother, and I was sober, and I wasn't drinking, and they better watch out what they did or said, or I was going to go out and get drunk. You just stick it in and twist it. And my home group heard, and I don't know if you have a home group, get one. They know what you're doing and saying when you're not around. Do you ever drive down these freeways of yours on a Monday morning, and you know who you get behind? Somebody that's having an affair with the abutment at 7 o'clock in the morning that's driving 25 miles an hour. And you can't go around him, and you don't know. I know what I want to do with my car. I've thought of that. And you get just ready, you know, and poo on the Serenity Prayer, poo on anything else. Your knuckles are white. You know, drives up beside you, toot, toot, beep, beep, woo-hoo, a member of your home group. Oh, yes, good my heart. God grant me the serenity to accept. It happens. They hang from the rafters. They pop out of sewers. They're waiting behind a tree. And they heard. And they told me to go home and treat my family like I treated people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did. Because I was willing to go to any lengths. And I shook hands. Hello, I'm Beth, I'm Mother. I didn't know who they were. I had a big and four littles when I got sober. And I found out who they were. And very fast. Treating them like members of AA and practicing those steps, those traditions. And we're big on the absolutes, honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. We know that nobody's absolute, but there are four questions that come out of there that help you out before you open the hole in the center of your face. And the questions are, is what you are about to do right or wrong? Is what you are about to do and say true or false? Is what you are about to do and say ugly or beautiful? And most of important of all, how will it affect the other guy? Is it kind? Is it necessary? And I had to lay a pretty good groundwork with those. My daughter Anne is almost 37. And she lives near me. She has three of my six grandchildren. And the oldest of whom is 14 almost. The youngest is just about 7 weeks old. And I never thought I would be, I'm going to divert here. I never thought I would be in a room when children would come in the room and say, Grandma, or Daddy, Mommy, Grandma, what kind of trouble are we going to get in today? And I love them, and they love me. They have taught me how to be a tooth fairy. They have taught me how to run and jump in leaves. They have taught me the proper way to eat an ice cream cone so half of it drips down your, you know, into your armpits. I love them, and we have a wonderful time, a wonderful time. Our favorite thing to do is to go to the Dairy Queen, and we order one chocolate soda, and we have six straws. The little goofer is, he's too young to go. So there's me and the five of them. And my 10-year-old grandson says, hit it, Grandma. And I, one, two, three, and we blow, and the chocolate goes all over, and the whipped cream all over, and we don't care. We're alive, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Sobriety is living, people. It's having fun. It's laughter. It's wiping tears from the eyes of the new person. It's watching for the hand to go up. I'm new when somebody says that, and it's getting over there, and it's talking to them, and it's giving them your phone number. And I don't care if you've only been sober a day, and somebody else is just raising their hand that they're new. Get over there. You've got more to tell them in 24 hours than I can tell them after 21 years. And don't forget it. These things are important, and my grandchildren are teaching me how to live. My daughter Ann and I are very close. She calls me every day. My daughter Linda, the mother who just had the little one, she and her husband live very close, and they have now three of my grandchildren. And none of these relationships were easy to put together, people. It takes time and effort on our part. It's like my home group told me, All my family ever wanted was a halfway decent life. And I was a white tornado that went spilling through that house. And like that spider, I got to put together what I destroyed, brick by brick, with step by step. My son Bruce did not talk to me for the first 3 years I was sober. You know what that's like? You walk in sober and you sit down to eat dinner and they don't want to talk to you. They get up and they walk out. He said, I don't want to sit with her. I'd hurt him very badly physically. You know what you told me? You said you keep going to his little league games. You keep doing those things. And don't squash him. Hold your hand out like this, Beth. And if he flies away and he doesn't come back, you weren't meant to have him. And if he flies away and comes back, you were meant to have him all the time. I'll never forget that very warm day in July on a ball mound when his eyes searched the stand and they found mine. And he saluted me with a ball, and after the game was over, he said, you know, Mom, it doesn't make any difference if we win or we lose as long as you're here. And I could sit down and explain to him about alcoholism. My son John, the baby, is 28 years old with an 18.5-inch neck. And I'm real fast, I'm going to tell you these things. Because we set the clocks ahead tonight. Don't forget. You're sober. You shouldn't forget things like that. Because then you'd be late for your little meeting in the morning, and that wouldn't be good for you. He came in the house, and he wanted lunch. And I called my sponsor up. I didn't boil an egg till I was 9 months sober. I didn't know how. And I shook so... I shook, you know, I'd write down the one thing of value that I learned at every meeting of AA, and my husband and my sponsor had to do it for the first 5 months I was sober. I shook too hard. And so my sponsor, I said to her, he wants a sandwich. What am I going to do? I don't know how to do anything. And all of a sudden, these two little eyes in this baseball cap came up over the counter, and he said, I'll teach you how to make a sandwich. And my sponsor heard it. And she said, you came as a child, Beth. Take the hand of a child. Let him teach you. You have got to crawl before you walk. So he took out the peanut butter and the jelly, and he spread peanut butter here, and he said, Daddy says, be careful, it'll make holes. And then he put jelly on this, and he put them together like that. And he said, that's a sandwich, now you make one. And tears streaming down my face, I made my first peanut butter and jelly sandwich while a 7-year-old patted me on the back and said, job well done. You know, that's because of you. You know, I learned how to love and you do things for other people and you don't ask for anything in return. And my husband and I were learning how to talk to each other and learning how to love each other. And we really built up a beautiful thing there. And we went on picnics and we were holding hands and all that. And I had 5 years of sobriety and he didn't feel well. And I took him to the hospital and I heard those words, acute myeloid monocytic leukemia, and my soul split in half. You were there. And you helped me along. You came when times got too tough to go anywhere in the next 2.5 years. You came over to the house with the big book and the 12 and 12. And you were always there. You gave me strength and you gave me courage in the nows of each day. I never heard him complain. He never put his wants or needs before ours. And the night before he died, in July of 78, he said to me, you want to dance? And we put on an old Sinatra record, and I held him up. He was 6 feet tall, and he never weighed under 195, and he weighed 103. And so I kind of held him, and we swayed back and forth, and he said to me, I'm going to tell you something I never want you to forget. And I want you to pass it on. That there has never been anything as wonderful as Alcoholics Anonymous. For not did it only give you your life back, Beth, but it gave us ours back too. And I will be able to say thank you very soon to the person who made it possible. Yeah, I miss him. But you want to know something? I remember the good times now. The good times. People, I don't care what comes into your life. You don't have to drink. You don't have to use anything. There is more strength and more love and more caring and more joy and more wonderment in these meeting rooms and with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous than there is in any other thing in the world. This is the most beautiful thing, the most beautiful gift in the whole world. I want to read you something my kids gave to me, and then I'll shut up. They gave me this on where you say birthday, I say anniversary. March the 5th, 1993. Dear Mom, just think what the future would have been like if you didn't go to AA 21 years ago. We would have all been torn apart with no lives at all. Looking back, we remember that through Daddy's illness and after he died, you never complained nor did you give anything but hope and faith to us. It made us strong and gave us the courage, hope, trust, and faith we have today as adults. Through all the tough times, through the jolly times, you are always there. A smile, a chuckle, words we need at the time. Mom, we are blessed by God and by your wonderful AA pals in that way of life. You've touched so many others in their families too, Mom, just like you've touched ours. As we've said, if we could sit with God, we would say thank you for giving our mom this gift so she could pass on this way of life to us and we can pass it on to our children. Just thanks God for giving us back our mother. Keep trudging your road, Mom. We love you. Your grandchildren think there's nobody in the world like you. We know you never take credit. You say it's the grace of God in AA, but we know, best friend, you are doing the footwork. Keep going, Mother, on your road. And from all of us, thanks for life itself. It says, God bless you. We love you and respect you. And it's signed Annie, Linda, Bruce, and John. And I thank you for this, because without you and your courage and your teaching and your being there in the nows of every day, this never could have been. And people, go live, will you? Get out there and all that, in spite of the icky that comes into your life, because that's life. The happiness, the joy, and the freedom that this fellowship, this program, this God's grace gives to us is the most wonderful thing in the world. And now may the road rise to meet you. And may the wind be always at your back. And may the sun shine warm upon your face. and the rain falls soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand in the nows of each day. Do you say the Lord's Prayer? Shall we say the Lord's Prayer?